Hey, good evening, everybody. Mike Malloy here. Welcome to tonight's program. It is Friday night, which I don't think means that much. Except if you're listening online, that means we'll play ABBA or incidental music. About 45 minutes ago, it crossed the wire that Betty Ford had died at age 93. The woman who established in 1982 the Betty Ford Addiction Center in California, among other things, she was such an anomaly to me. I never thought that much about her husband. He was an interim president, an accidental president. There was a time in this country when both the president and the vice president, for the first time and probably, well, hopefully only time in our history, neither one had been elected until we got to December 12th, 2000. Betty Ford was a woman's rights advocate. Her positions on just about every single issue would have to be considered progressive. In her 58-year marriage to first representative, then vice president, then president Gerald Ford, Betty Ford used to make asides to people who were listening that she constantly worked on her husband to pull him into the, at the time, into the 20th century with his attitudes. And I think she did a pretty good job. It'll be all over the papers tomorrow. We'll talk about, or you'll read about it and talk about it to the extent that you're interested. But Betty Ford, dead at the age of 93. Just struck me as sad in a weird way, just like the launch of the final space shuttle mission today. I watched it, and after watching with my then 8-year-old son, watching the launch of the Challenger that blew up, from that point to the current launch, every time I've seen one of those launches, it has made me nervous. Trepidatious, I believe, is a word. The disintegration of the space shuttle that was coming in for landing was equally a horror. But to watch a launch and then to see it disintegrate about, what was it, 40 or 50 seconds after launch, it was just very, very frightening. But watching the launch this morning, after 30 years, the government of the United States has decided to give it up. And I think that's what was sad to me this morning, is to realize, and yeah, I've seen all the video of Kennedy, John Kennedy, spurring this country on to not just a moon landing, but also to the continuing exploration of inner space. I don't mean that in a Zen way. You know what I'm talking about. The continuing exploration of space. I can remember after that speech hearing all sorts of conversation about a moon landing that eventually occurred in, what was it, 69, and the next step was Mars. Remember that? Some of you are old enough to remember that. The that spirit of American engineers and explorers, it was still there. Seems so long ago. But the launch of the first space shuttle 30 years ago, 30 years and 3 months, I believe I read today, was a significant moment. Made more so, I think, by the fact that today the United States made its final move regarding space for the foreseeable future. And it's now going to be turned over to, yes, indeed, private enterprise. So we know pretty much how that will wind up, don't we? This first hour of the program tonight is sponsored by Kath from Canada. Kath from Canada. She has a message. She writes, finding you and the friends that I've made through your chat room has been life-changing. Thank you, Mike and Kathy, for helping to build friendships beyond borders. Keep fighting the good fight. Kath from Canada. Now, she actually is sponsoring Hour 2, but I just thought I'd go ahead and mention it during Hour 1 because she's our only sponsor tonight. So I'll mention it later on when it's appropriate. But I wanted to just let everybody in the Skype chat room, the Ustream chat room, that Kath from Canada had sponsored the second hour tonight. Watching the old video of Betty Ford at various stages in her political life over the past hour right before the program started, I don't know. I was looking at those videos and listening to what people were saying then, not just Betty Ford, but her husband, who Jerry Ford was very, very bland. If you remember, it was had it not been for Gerald Ford, I don't think there would have been a Chevy Chase of Saturday Night Live. But watching the people in the video, in the background, or listening to some of them, from back in the 70s, it was hard to realize that, you know, that was only about, 35, 40 years ago? Not 40, about 35 years ago. 70 what? When was Nixon run out of office? In 74? And Gerald Ford was president for what? A year and a half? 2 years? Something? Hard to believe that that was only, 30 plus years ago. Just hard to believe when one considers where we are now vis-a-vis then. I realize times were tough back then too, but it looked like for a while, at least it did to me, that things were going to change. And of course they did change. They got much, much worse. CNBC reported today, quote, June's miserable jobs report has put the fear of a double dip recession back into the markets. Oh, really? I didn't know. I didn't know the markets give a damn about stuff like that anymore. You know, they just, you know, the markets, what are they talking about? The bond market, the stock market, the derivatives market, all this paper shuffling and moving of currencies and commodities. What? The jobs report put the fear of a double. They don't care about a jobs. It doesn't mean a goddamn thing to these markets. Anyway, CNBC says it does. CNBC says the U.S. economy added a paltry 18,000 jobs in June, and the unemployment rate climbed to 9.2% as laid-off government workers continued to join the ranks of the unemployed. Oh, and by the way, they always adjust the numbers down, don't they? There were also 44,000 fewer jobs created than previously reported for April and May. Funny how that works, huh? So that's what CNBC reported. A couple more people had comments about this today, and I'll share that with you when we come back. And it's Prairie 2's report is about that also, which... we'll get to. What else we got tonight? We're going to what Obama wants. Three arrests now in the Murdoch scandal in the UK. Dear God, I wish they'd start arresting the bastards over here. Canada has ended its combat mission in Afghanistan. And Michelle Bachmann hopes that higher unemployment will help her political campaign. What an unconscious psychopath she is. We'll be right back.
listening to Mike Malloy. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
That's him. All right, 21 past the hour. Regarding these numbers out today, Sarah Burns is economic justice organizer with a project on inequality and the common good at the Institute for Policy Studies, IPS. She is an organizer, or the organizer, for something called the Common Security Club Network. Have you heard about that? Common Security Club Network. The Institute for Policy Studies said in a statement this morning, quote, many Americans are choosing to form resilience circles, also called common security clubs, which are groups of 10 to 20 people who bond together to increase their personal security. Groups are focused on joint learning, mutual aid, and social action, with members often providing valuable assistance to one another in times of need. Resilience circles are meeting in over 25 cities across the United States, and people in dozens of other cities are forming groups. Now, that was from the Institute of Policy Studies. Burns, Sarah Burns, who is one of the organizers, said, quote, we're in this together. We're not going back to a model of economic growth based on debt, overconsumption, and cheap energy. We have to prepare ourselves and our communities for change, end quote. This is the first I've heard of this, resilience circles. Have you heard about this? I have not heard of this. Groups of 10 to 20 people. They're called common security clubs. Either name. That certainly should warrant a web search, wouldn't you think? Common security clubs. Wow. And Max Wolf is an instructor at the Graduate Program in International Affairs at the New School University. And he's a senior analyst with Greencrest Capital. He wrote in a blog post today, quote, we continue to see significant weakness in public sector employment, led by local public sector job losses. Public sector employment contracted by 39,000 jobs in June. Federal stimulus is declining, and states and localities are feeling the pinch. State difficulties and budget issues are being passed along to municipalities. In June, we continued to see heavy reduction in local employment, particularly education employees. Local governments reduced payrolls by 18,000 in June. 12,600 of these local job losses came in education. These declines are accentuated by the June end and July start of the fiscal year for most states and municipalities. The public sector lost 39,000 jobs in June, with the federal government making a larger contribution than in recent months, reducing payrolls by 14,000. State and local governments have been shedding jobs for over 2 years. I'm telling you, I know a lot of people just either are not feeling this yet, or are in some sort of avoidance state or denial state about what is going on in this country. And I have to admit, when I drive around Metro Atlanta, it's very difficult to see any difference from 8-10 years ago, except you don't see Humvees anymore. But it's and okay, there may be fewer of the monster SUVs like the Cadillac Escalades, whatever the hell they're called, on the road. Although since we have Atlanta's become the rap star capital of the known universe, a lot of the rap stars do drive these big Escalades. But for the most part, the only difference I can see is not as many big cars on the road, big trucks, big vehicles on the road. I don't see any difference. It's hard to see it. There was a Chevrolet plant, or no, Ford plant in one of the suburbs of Atlanta, Doraville. that goes right along I-285, which is a perimeter highway around Metro Atlanta. That has been closed for, I guess, about a year and a half, maybe a little bit longer. That's kind of weird to drive back by the enormous auto assembly plant, certainly as big as most that you'll find any place in the United States. And it's shut down. It has been shut down for a while. But other than that, it's difficult. And I think that's part of the problem. The illusion out there is still this consuming, greed-head, highly distracted United States citizenry. And it's just not sinking in, I guess. And any of the upscale shopping malls around Metro Atlanta still seem to be doing business. I guess the key word there is upscale. It's just doing business like there's nothing happening. It sets up this cognitive dissonance for me anyway, where I see the numbers, I see the figures, I know what's going on, and yet it's just, there's no readily visible evidence. It's the damnedest thing.
Right here, right now, Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. So the news, like I say, the news about the economy just continues to be bad, worse, and worser, as Keith Olbermann used to say on MSNBC, bad, worse, and worser. But it's hard to see. It's hard to see it happening in Metro Atlanta, and consequently, I pretty much walk around in a state of confusion. Of course, that has nothing to do with the cognitive dissonance. That's just me. But all right, corporate patriotism, democracy, and freedom. What from? Bruce Enberg, or as you know him, Prairie 2, he writes, the June job numbers were bad, really bad. Not end of the world bad, but the Republicans are working on that. We need 150,000 new jobs every month just to keep up with population growth. And projections were for 100,000 jobs in June, but only 18,000 were created. This is partly from housing construction, sharply cutting jobs in the middle of the construction season, and this offset other new jobs. The Federal Reserve has already thrown in the towel on job creation last month, and now the Obama reelection campaign is trying to spin it that the 2012 election won't be about jobs. The Republicans continue to chant, where are the jobs? And we need to slash government jobs and spending. This is goddamn crazy. As usual, Bruce writes, they're out to lunch. The trend for the past year has been for a steady reduction in federal jobs and spending. The states, especially Republican ones, have taken a meat axe to their budgets. The Republicans want much more of the same and to savage so-called pass-through payments to everyone except the rich, things like unemployment benefits, Medicare, Social Security, and the like. The largely unnoticed bad news in the jobs report was an unsettling drop in hourly wages. Even with inflation pressures from high gas prices, wages still fell. In a period of so-called recovery, when wages should be trending upward. But this is not unexpected. As I've said repeatedly, the high weekly unemployment claims that happen even as we have new jobs created reflect a deliberate practice by large companies to drive down wages by firing workers and then hiring at lower wages, many of the same workers, after sufficient fear has been instilled. So, Obama is increasingly touting the Republican talking point of growth through austerity and the need to build the confidence of business so that they will hire. In fact, we've already had a year of ever-increasing austerity, and big business isn't afraid to hire. They're hiring people just at ever lower wages. Indeed, they don't need to expand output as they're only operating at 80% capacity currently. Small businesses have been largely frozen out of expansion by big business and big finance, as well as suffering from the same lack of demand for their goods from the falling wages and shrinking government. Obama is trying and perhaps succeeding to beat Republicans at their own game over the debt ceiling, offering ever larger cuts to the long-term budget and demanding the elimination of tax breaks that Republicans can't defend to their base. Obama increasingly looks good to the majority of voters who believe the Republican talking points about growth through austerity is nonsense. Secretary Geithner has raised the 14th Amendment's requirement that federal debts must be paid as justification for Obama to ignore the debt ceiling if Congress won't act. Obama has continued to throw the question back to Congress as their obligation to fix the problem and not committing himself on the constitutionality of the debt ceiling law. Restricting borrowing or refusing to pay the debt isn't a power granted to Congress in the Constitution. Indeed, the opposite is true. They have to pay the debt. Teabag congressmen are incensed about the idea that Obama might uphold the Constitution and promise impeachment if he were to continue paying the federal government obligations authorized by law, and is cited in Section 4 of the 14th Amendment as an absolute requirement, which, quote, is not to be questioned, end quote. That's in the Constitution. Is not to be questioned. The teabaggers are all about the Constitution, right? Yeah, okay. Bruce continues, the thing about Obama giving spending concessions to avert the crisis is that these cuts can be reversed in the appropriations bills of any subsequent Congress. However, if the Republicans are successful in creating a real crisis and ride that crisis into control of the government of 2012, then they can force structural changes we can't undo. We know they don't want democracy. And they could promise an economic recovery if we simply gave that up, gave up democracy in any meaningful sense. We don't really have it now, but the potential is still there, and that's what they really want to kill. Democracy. You have to keep in mind that things really aren't that bad with the economy. It would be easy enough to produce a dramatic recovery once the corporatists were entrenched in power, once and for all, and any opposition would be marginalized and, over time, eliminated permanently. This is exactly what Mussolini did in the 1920s. And he was hailed as an economic genius after he replaced the Italian parliament with a conference of corporate leaders. The word he coined for this merging of the corporations with the state was fascism. I'm sure the Republicans have a word of their own, something referring to patriotism or democracy or freedom, without allowing any of it. Prairienumeral2.com. Fasci, bundle. Isn't that what it means? Bundle? I think so. It's a bundle of sticks that was carried by honor guard. I know I learned this in Latin. I just don't remember. Fasci. I'm sure somebody will email me the correct root of that word. Paul Krugman says Obama met with but the Krugman must read what Prairie 2 reads, because Krugman usually is on the same page as Prairie 2, or is it vice versa? I don't know. But great minds work in the same groove, right? On Thursday, yesterday, Obama met with the Republicans to discuss a debt deal. Of course, nobody knows exactly what was proposed, Krugman writes, but news reports before the meeting suggested Obama is offering huge huge spending cuts, possibly including cuts to Social Security and an end to Medicare status as a program available in full to all Americans, regardless of income. Obama. Krugman says, obviously the details matter a lot, but progressives and Democrats in general are understandably very worried. Should they be? In a word, yes. You realize what Obama's going to do? Or what he's doing? Does anybody? And I still have to explain why I will not vote for him again. Supreme Court! Oh, stop. The reports say, Krugman writes, that the Obama plan also involves significant new revenues. Notice how nobody uses the word taxes anymore. A notion that remains anathema to the Republican base. So the goal may be to paint the Republicans into a corner, making Republicans look like intransigent extremists, which they are. But let's be frank. It's getting harder and harder to trust Obama's motives in the budget fight, given the way his economic rhetoric has veered to the right. In fact, if all you did was listen to Obama's speeches, you might conclude that he basically shares the GOP's diagnosis of what ails our country and what should be done to fix it. And maybe that's not a false impression. Maybe it's the simple truth. I'm starting to feel the same way, aren't you? I know Prairie too is a holdout. He is absolutely determined to, he continues to believe that he's an optimist. Prairie too, no matter what he sounds like, you know, some of these negative missives, he's an optimist that if this country doesn't stay on the path with the Democratic president and retake the Congress with Democrats in both houses, then we're doomed. But while I so deeply appreciate everything Prairie 2 writes and shared on this program, that's where he and I split off. You know, because I'm starting to be convinced that Obama is a wolf in sheep's clothing for whatever his motives are. You know, I'm, like a lot of people, I keep waiting for Obama to play the Clinton card, you know, to do the triangulation, you know, to take away from the Republicans all of their rhetoric, which is what Clinton did after the midterms during his first term in 94. You know, had his ass handed to him electorally. And he came roaring back. Of course, there were tax increases that just about every Republican said was going to destroy the economy. And what it did was create 22 million jobs. But Obama is not Clinton. Obama is a very, very, I'll say cautious tonight. I said cowardly man the other night, but let's just say cautious.
Mr. Nice Guy. Here's Mike Malloy.
Look at the state of the world that we live in, where no one gives a damn.
10 before the hour. So the economic news that was released today and Obama's quickie address this morning, there's nothing good on the horizon, nothing good anywhere in terms of the economy. There are groups that are starting to get together now, survival groups. Oh, God. Anyways, Krugman said today, one striking example of Obama's rightward shift came in last weekend's presidential address, in which Obama had this to say about the economics of the budget. Quote, government has to start living within its means, just like families do. What? We have to cut the spending. we can't afford, so we can put the economy on sounder footing and give our businesses the confidence they need to grow and create jobs, end quote. That's what Obama said. Now, as Krugman points out, that's three of the right-wing's favorite economic fallacies in just two sentences. No, the government shouldn't budget the way families do. On the contrary, trying to balance the budget in times of economic distress is a recipe for making everything worse. Spending cuts right now won't, quote, put the economy on sounder footing, end quote. They would reduce growth and raise unemployment. I mean, all you have to do is look at today's numbers. And last but not least, Krugman points out businesses aren't holding back because they lack confidence in government policies. They're holding back because they don't have customers. A problem that is being made worse, not better, by short-term spending cuts. So what the hell has happened to your president, Democrats? Ooh, no, I shouldn't say that, should I? What has happened to our president, truth seekers? Huh? What the hell is going on here? He sounds like No, I can't say that. He sounds like John Boehner. Exactly. Krugman says people have asked me why the president's economic advisors aren't telling him not to believe in the confidence fairy. That is, not to believe the assertion that they talk about on the right, but overwhelmingly refuted by the evidence, that slashing spending in the face of a depressed economy will magically create jobs. Woohoo! Krugman's answer, what economic advisors? He doesn't have any. Krugman says some of what we're hearing is presumably, since there are no economic advisors, coming from the political team, whose members seem to believe that a move toward Republican positions, reminiscent of former President Bill Clinton's triangulation of the 1990s, is the key to Mr. Obama's reelection. Oh. Oh, I see. Yeah, well... Yeah, I forgot about that. Krugman concludes by saying, watching Mr. Obama and listening to his recent statements, it's hard not to get the impression that he's now turning for advice to people who really believe that the deficit, not unemployment, is the top issue facing America right now, and who also believe that the great bulk of deficit reduction should come from spending cuts. It's worth noting that even Republicans weren't suggesting cuts to Social Security. This is something Obama and those he listens to apparently want for its own sake. What? Which raises the big question, Krugman says. If a debt deal does emerge and it overwhelmingly reflects conservative priorities and ideology, should Democrats in Congress vote for it? Mr. Krugman is being a little... facetious there, you know? And he concludes by saying, Obama's people will no doubt argue that their fellow party members should trust Obama. That whatever deal emerges was the best he could get. See, he's offering cuts that the Republicans aren't even asking for. And we're supposed to believe that that's the best he could get. He gives everything away as soon as he sits down. Krugman said, but it's hard to see why a president who's gone out of his way to echo Republican rhetoric and endorse false conservative views deserves that kind of trust. Well, amen, bro. Can I get an amen?
Amen.
Can I get an amen from the choir?
Amen.
Can I get an amen from the back of the church?
Amen.
Back of the church, I can't hear you.
Amen.
Why trust him? I think the only people who trust Obama right now are, so-called yellow dog Democrats and people who are afraid that if we don't have Obama. And how many times have we heard this? Oh, my God. If we don't have Obama, everything's going to hell. You know, before that, if we don't have this Democrat, everything's going to hell. And you know, so we'd elect a Democrat. If we don't elect that one, everything's going to hell. And everything has gone to hell. And it's not, you know, the executive branch only has so much power, folks. Come on. And you need an ass-kicking leader. You need somebody in the executive branch who just, you know, when he has these little meetings with the Republican leadership, as soon as they walk through the door, you know, he grabs them by the back of the head. Just reach up there and grab a handful of that hair and just jerk them over the couch and sit them down. And then pull out a whip and say, now listen, this is what we're going to do. We're going to save the country. You have an objection to that? Crack, you know, then crack that whip. Oh, never mind. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy Program. This hour is sponsored by Kath from Canada. Yes, it is. Kath from Canada. Also known as the hoser to the wannabes of the Molloy and Skype chat rooms. And her message, finding you and the friends that I have made through your chat room has been life-changing. Thank you, Mike and Kathy, for helping to build friendships beyond borders. Keep fighting the good fight. Well, thank you, Kath from Canada. Thank you very much. Nice message, too. I said a moment ago, or last hour, I'd never heard of resilience circles or common security clubs. Resilience circle sounds very pagan. I love it. So, I did a Google search. Holy Toledo. You need to check this out. You really do. Resilience circles. Just do a Google search. You'll come up with everything you need to know. They're also called common security clubs, but I think you'll have better results on Google if you do resilience circles. It's worth the 3.5 seconds it takes to type it in and hit search. I'm telling you. Do it. In light of our president here, over at Huffington Post today, Miles Mogilescu, as I saw the headline to this, I thought, what? Will Obama be the first Democratic president to cut Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid? And Mogilescu points out, very, very obvious fact, Bill Clinton was the president who presided over the shredding of all those regulations that were put in place in the New Deal regarding banking and financial industry that for a generation protected Americans from the worst boom and bust cycles of an otherwise unfettered free market system that had led to the Great Depression. Now, when this writer refers to a generation, actually it's more like three generations. It depends on what you consider a generation. I consider 20 years to be a generation. That's pushing a little bit, I guess. Maybe it's more like 30. But anyway, Clinton supported and signed legislation. And this is the, if you listen to this program on a regular basis, you know, this is one of the things that to me identifies Clinton as one of the architects of the destruction that we're going through right now. Now, did Clinton do all the dirty dealings that the bank fraud bastards on Wall Street and the financial services industry did? No. But he opened the door. He kicked the door off its hinges so that these rapacious rats just could come running through and do what capitalism does best. Destroy everything. Except for a few winners. You know, there's always a few winners. That's what capitalism's about. And capitalism always holds out the false promise that you too can be a millionaire. No, you can't. Not you. I mean, sure, there's thousands of millionaires in the United States. Thousands of them. They constitute that 1% that continues to own your ass. There are thousands of millionaires here. Hundreds of billionaires. Hell yeah. There's also 330 million people in this country. That's a third of a billion. Oh, never mind. Why get worked up about this? Anyway, as Miles Mogilescu points out at HuffPo, Clinton supported and signed the legislation that ended or repealed the Glass-Steagall Act. And that was the act that had placed a wall between federally insured commercial banking and risky investment banking. Okay? They're like night and day. One kind of makes sense, although I don't deal with banks. The other one is casino capitalism, the kind that these capitalist rapacious bastards love the most. That is where they make a fortune, many fortunes, and if things go bust, you bail them out. Period. That's what we're doing right now. That's exactly what we're doing. Oh, no, Mike, it's Obama's fault because, you know, he's from Kenya. Oh, Jesus Christ. Anyway, we also signed legislation, Clinton did, that banned the federal government from regulating derivatives. In other words, the banksters, the creeps, the thugs, the sons of bitches on Wall Street, and I'm using Wall Street as a generic term, they got Obama. And how did they reward Obama? Well, you know what happened in 98, 99, right? Anyway, they got Obama to sign legislation that was put together by the rising fascists in the U.S. House and the Senate. Legislation that said, essentially, we've come up with a new way to manipulate the capitalist markets and destroy people's livelihoods, take their savings, destroy their college funds, bankrupt whatever they thought they had, and at the same time destroy the one investment that most Americans have, their house. We've come up with a way to do it. Now, what we need from you, Bubba, we need you to sign this legislation that says that the government will not ever, 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 ever get involved in, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, what we call derivatives. You like that? Derivatives. It means it derives its existence from something else. All right, Bubba, don't look at it too close. Sign it. And he did. And he did. And as Miles Mogilescu points out, then, this dismantling of financial regulation was one of the primary causes of the economic bubble, which led to the crash of 2008 and the now swamping America Great Recession, from which millions of unemployed Americans and underwater homeowners are still suffering, and from which a lot of Americans, millions, let's face it, are not going to recover. Not, N-O-T, not going to recover. So, HuffPo says, now the question must be seriously asked. Will Barack Obama be the first Democratic president to preside over cutting the greatest remaining Democratic legacies, Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid? The essential programs that provide a safety net to the American middle class? My answer? Of course. Of course he will. Of course this president will. Miles Mogilescu says already Obama has put cuts in Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid on the table. If Republicans aren't so crazy that they reject Obama's proposal of a grand bargain for cutting these and other key domestic programs in exchange for a few tens of billions of dollars worth of closing the most egregious tax loopholes for the richest special interests, then Obama will preside over the beginning of the end of Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. Not in one fell swoop as proposed by Paul Ryan and House Republicans, but in death by a thousand cuts. This is what our president is doing. Mogilescu concludes by saying, once Democrats take their finger out of the dike of Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid and allow cuts to begin, over time the floodwaters will overwhelm them, and these vital middle-class safety net programs will be dismantled brick by brick. Sometimes it's hard to know what the Democratic Party still stands for. Miles writes, oh, please, Miles, come on, it doesn't stand for a goddamn thing. Nothing. Zero. Strong regulation of the banks. Does it stand for that? Bill Clinton killed that. Protecting Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. Not if Barack Obama has his way. The new Democratic Party slogan will become, the Republicans want to kill Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid fast. We'll be sure they're only killed slowly. My, oh, my, oh, my. Who'd have thunk it back in Grant Park? How long ago was it? With all those hundreds of thousands of people crowded in Grant Park in Chicago. And walking out on the stage was the new president of the United States. Or was that just when he won the nomination? I don't even remember. It seems like so long ago. The hour. About the next hour, we will do podcast trivia and give away a one-year commercial-free podcast subscription to this program. Oh, yeah. Another thing that Bill Clinton did was end welfare as we know it. Remember, wasn't that the phrase? And the result of the Clinton welfare reform plan that the Republicans love, because Republicans are amoral and they don't give a damn who dies, who gets sick, who winds up starving to death in the street. They couldn't care less because they're Christians. They're the new kind of Christian. Not the old kind. The new kind of Christian. The greed-filled bastards who, have the little fish symbol in their store front window and beat you to death with a cross. Ow! But Clinton and his welfare reform package forced tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, how many? Struggling Americans who just were not being included at the table. They were the ones standing down there waiting for the crumbs to fall off. And Clinton said, clear the table, no more crumbs. What a son of a bitch. I mean, we have had a series of sons of bitches run this country, haven't we? We really have. We've had some real hard-ass, mean politicians, Democrats and Republicans. I'm talking about domestically. The foreign policies of the United States has been corrupt since Teddy Roosevelt. But just some real evil, by any definition, evil bastards run this country. And not just executives. I'm also talking about the members of Congress who seem to just go out of their way to make things harder and harder and harder for people who will never be part of the power establishment, will never be part of the upper middle class or even the middle class. Never. So kick their asses. Beat them. I guess that's the Christian ethic. Isn't that what Pastor Hagee used to say? Starve! You know, a good Christian man who supports Israel because Pastor Hagee wants a lot of Jews around to murder when they won't accept Jesus, when Jesus comes sliding down that huge mountain of corpses that Pastor Hagee is doing everything in his fat ass world to produce. Did you follow me on that? I guess not. Never mind. I digress. So now we have Obama. Now we have another Democrat who is doing the dirty work for capitalist America. See, while you and I are all focused on, well, maybe not you, while I'm focused on this psychopath from Minnesota, Michelle Bachmann, and all these psychopaths that are popping up, I used to think that the South was the only region in the country that produced crazy politicians. Yikes, what happened? I mean, we still have Haley Barbour and Jeff Sessions and our own governor here. But, wow, these people popping up in Michigan, the Stalinist governor of Michigan and Wisconsin, the anti-human life bastard there, and Minnesota, that produces Bachmann. This is the same state that produced Paul Wellstone, right? What happened? It's pretty astonishing. So, while everybody is focused on the foreign illegalities perpetrated by so many Democratic and Republican administrations, we've had in our midst, or our midst too, both, people such as Bill Clinton and now Barack Obama, people who profess to be Democrats, who are as divorced from Democratic Party principles as, the Catholic Church is from the sanctity of the butts of little children. That divorced. But I know there's still, you know, a lot of people listen to this program only listen because they, they're Democrats. And they think, well, Jesus, how can one of our own, like Mike Malloy, be so much of a, be so involved in betrayal of our good and decent president of the United States, Barack Obama, who's just trying so hard to undo 8 years of the Bush crime family. You know, why doesn't Malloy understand? And I say that because I get emails that way. I'm not saying it as though anybody gives a damn about my point of view, but I get emails that say that. How can you continue to do this? Ease up on our president. You're as bad as the Republicans. Worse. Okay. We'll be right back.
See, it looking like the world's gone.
before the hour. This hour is sponsored by Kath from Canada, also known as Hoser to the wannabes of the Malloy and Skype chat rooms. Kath in Canada. Her message, finding you and the friends that I've made through your chat room, has been life-changing. Thank you, Mike and Kathy, for helping to build friendships beyond borders. Keep fighting the good fight. Kath from Canada. Thank you. Michelle Bachman thinks that today's crummy jobs report, the one we were talking about earlier, is great news. She really does, for her own political ambitions. This is how sick and degenerate this woman is. CNBC, Carl Quintanilla, who was interviewing her, says, quote, does it strike you that the unemployment rate goes up, that your chances of winning office also goes up? Bachman, well, that could be. And again, I hope so. Well, on the one hand, you got to give her a little credit. Not many Republicans are willing to publicly admit that they hope sabotaging the economy will help them win the 2012 election. You know, Bachman is part of the imminent destruction of the country, and she's being treated like a real candidate. This is the part that just, I don't know, makes me want to open a vein, I swear to God. In Iowa, this is from jackandjoepolitics.com, in Iowa there's a social conservative pledge called the marriage vow, a declaration of dependence upon marriage and family. It is a pledge that, you know, Republicans and other psychopaths are supposed to sign, because they don't, they're not talking about marriage and family. They're talking about a certain select view of marriage and family. They're not talking about marriage. They're talking about some exclusive relationship that Republicans think constitutes marriage, which it doesn't. But anyway, this whole thing is anti-abortion, anti-same-sex marriage, anti-divorce, etc., etc. Republicans are being urged to sign it. It's got some pretty rigid-sounding stuff, but there's also this little extra bit of spice. It says this, quote, slavery had a disastrous impact on African-American families. Yet, sadly, a child born into slavery in 1860 was more likely to be raised by his mother and father in a two-parent household than was an African-American baby born after the election of the USA's first African-American president. Jesus Christ, that's the kind of sentence that just makes me want to get pliers and start ripping my own teeth out. As jackandjoepolitics.com says, oh, and jackandjoepolitics.com, that's a website for bourgeois or upper-income black folk. Okay, just so you know, it has nothing to do with the nursery rhyme. Anyway, it goes on to say, given that families were broken up regularly for sale during slavery, and that rape by the white masters was fairly common, this statement could not be more offensive. Putting aside the statistics on this, which are likely off base, I could not be more angry. When will Republicans inquire with actual black people whether or not we're okay with invoking slavery to score cheap political points? It has to stop. It is the opposite of persuasive, and is another reason Republicans repel us. It's hard to believe that Michelle Bachman would be foolish enough to sign this pledge. But proving Bachman may be crazier and more hardcore than Sarah Palin, she has. So what do you think? Will this torpedo her primary bid or propel her forward with the GOP base? Well, I can answer your question, editorial writer at jackandjoepolitics.com. Here, pick me. My hand's up. Choose me. I can answer. Thank you. It's not going to torpedo anything. This is the kind of nonsense. I mean, Neil Bortz, a syndicated right-wing crazy man, says the same thing. He says the same thing over and over and over again. All these right-wing slugs, the white ones, there's some right-wing black ones too, but they're very, very rare. But the right-wing white people always say the same thing. Well, you know, back in the day, you know, during slavery, master took care of everything. There's a place to live, there's food to eat. It was health care, as such as it was in the 1840s and 50s and 1720s and 1680s. So, you know, it was health care. If you hurt your foot, Massa would make sure that you got a proper surgeon to cut it off. And when you got sick, Massa would make sure that you had a nice place to be buried so that all the field hands could come gather around and sing all those old songs that we love so much in our church. We really do. We love those old Negro spirituals, don't we? I mean, every once in a while we bring in a Negro choir and they will sing to us. And, oh, my, those must have been times, weren't they, back during slavery? Huh? Everybody worked real hard. At the end of the day, Mass would come out on the porch with his crew and, you know, his daughters and his wife and his sons, and they'd all sit there, and the field hands would just sit down there on the lawn and around the steps and just sing all them old songs and play the banjo, and every once in a while those little children get up and dance around. Ooh, those were such good. And the white masters, see, the white people just took such good care. And now look, Barack Obama gets to be president, and the black family is in trouble. Jesus Christ, I hate this. I just hate this so much. I hate that I live in a country where we don't even know our own history, not even a tiny bit of it, and that the people who know the least about our history are the ones that claw their way out of the slime and the toilets and the public urinals and declare themselves to be presidential candidates. It's sick. It is sick. It is sick. A child born into slavery in 1860, this Republican pledge says, was more likely to be raised by his mother and father in a two-parent household. You ignorant sons of bitches, a household? A household? Have none of you white people ever toured what remains of slave quarters? Do you know what those two words mean? Slave quarters? Do you know what that means? So the writer at jackandjoepolitics.com says he or she, I could not be more angry. When will Republicans inquire with actual black people whether or not we're okay with invoking slavery to score cheap political points? It has to stop. Families were broken up regularly for sales during slavery. Rape by the master was very common. Oh, Jesus, God. It just keeps getting worse and worse and worse. Then on top of that, I get this from a friend of mine at Emory University, who is also in the film and video business. Bachman's chances for election as president are soaring. Bill writes, get used to it. President Bachman. I'm putting her chances at 50% and rising, depending on the economy. I have no doubt that she will get the Republican nomination. She's a perfect storm of telegenic looks, social conservatism, subtextually coded racism, and a Reagan-esque stage presence. Let's not mince words. The Yahoo teabagger end of the Republican Party loves her, and she knows the tropes that warm their troglodyte hearts. She is remarkably adept at avoiding tough questions while staying on message, and that message is that the economic mess we are all in is Obama's fault. She's partially right in the sense that Obama failed miserably to come up with the comprehensive New Deal type plan. He also failed to hold show trials of mortgage bankers and other assorted Wall Street maggots that would have helped set the right tone. Instead, the robber barons that raped the system in the first place got all the bailouts. Instead of listening to prescient and historically informed economists, Paul Krugman, Noriel Rubini, Obama bought into the failed free market solutions that are leading us into a double-dip recession. If this guy's a liberal, I'm going to be the next pope. And so the same majority that elected Bush the idiot for a second term is set to elect another utter incompetent who will give us an updated version of Bush's cowboy economics. The obscenely rich will get even richer, and the middle class will complete their transformation into the working poor. Teachers, firemen, and the police will be blamed for the budget deficit and be fired in droves. Abortion will be outlawed. The Supreme Court will become even more a tool of the corporate elites. And retirees deprived of Medicare and Social Security will become terrorists. Of course, the economy will get worse with retrenchments, so the authoritarian state will get even more repressive. Welcome to the new Somalia. Hope I'm wrong, but it's hard to be optimistic right now. Signed, Bill. President Bachman.
With the truth. It's more Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. Bottom of the next hour, we'll do podcast trivia, and you can win a one-year subscription to commercial-free Malloy program podcast downloads. So stick around for that. This hour has been sponsored by Kath from Canada, also known as Hoser, to the wannabes of the Malloy and Skype chat rooms. And Kath has a message. Her message is, finding you and the friends that I have made through your chat room has been life-changing. Thank you, Mike and Kathy, for helping to build friendships beyond borders. Keep fighting the good fight. It's very kind, Kath. Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for the sponsorship. What else we got? Oh yeah, did you see this? Dilation and curettage, am I saying that right, at DNC? I think this was at Huffington Post too. Pro-life with Wisconsin has an idea here. They're currently filing a lawsuit demanding that the University of Wisconsin's medical department stop teaching its medical students how to perform a DNC or an abortion, claiming that teaching this is a violation of a funding ban on state dollars going to abortion. Now, of course, they won't be performing abortions, but they will be showing how to do that as a legitimate medical procedure, as well as a DNC. You've heard of pregnancies that ended with the death of the fetus, say at 16 weeks, 20 weeks. The removal of the dead fetus, truth seeker, is the same procedure required to perform an abortion, and vice versa, obviously. So, some group of I don't know how to describe them, but they call themselves Pro-Life Wisconsin, wants this to stop. The medical director for Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin, who also has an academic practice at the Medical College of Wisconsin in Milwaukee, says it is vital. This is from the Cap Times in Milwaukee. It's vital for medical students to be trained in abortion services. This doctor says, quote, there are medically indicated pregnancy terminations and physicians need to have skills to do that. End quote. He notes that even physicians who do not work in abortion clinics may well need to perform an abortion. He says, quote, there are situations where patients have fetal death in utero at 16 to 18 weeks of gestation. The mode of delivery in the case of a dead fetus is exactly the same procedure as an abortion procedure. So learning these techniques is an essential part of what an OBGYN needs to know in order to provide comprehensive care to women, regardless of where they choose to practice, end quote. And this is why, he says, the accreditation organization for OBGYN programs requires that training in abortion services be offered. The University of Wisconsin's medical department, the university notes that if the ban goes through, not only would the residents have no formal training in the procedure whenever it would be deemed necessary, if they ever have to do it, but the school would lose its accreditation for gynecology and obstetrics. You see how pro-death these organizations are that call themselves pro-life? This is a sickness that is just astounding. This is stupefying ignorance coupled with I don't know, some kind of religious fanaticism that is beyond comprehension. I just don't understand. So not only do these anti-woman organizations like this misnamed Pro-Life Wisconsin, not only do these anti-woman organizations try every tactic they can to insert themselves into decisions made by a physician and a patient, but now they are trying to insert themselves into the teaching of certain surgical procedures in a university medical school because the procedure gets in the way of their fanatical religion or their attitude of anti-woman insistence. Wisconsin. Jesus God, Wisconsin. New Orleans, Associated Press. BP is arguing that most victims of last year's Gulf oil spill should not get any more payouts for future losses because the hardest hit areas are recovering and the economy is growing. The British oil company argues its case in a 29-page document made public Friday and filed with the Gulf Coast Claims Facility. The $20 billion fund is responsible for paying for damages from the spill. The company says the fund should end payments for future losses to everyone, except in limited cases to oyster harvesters. The company had already argued that fund administrator Ken Feinberg's formula for determining final payments artificially inflates future expected losses. Remember the institutional ads on television after the BP destroyed the Gulf of Mexico? Remember, BP will be here. We'll be here to take care of all the damage we've done. All the people that whose livelihoods we've destroyed, we'll be there. We'll take care of it. We're committed. Don't worry. We're BP. Yeah, you are, aren't you? let's go right to the phones. Oh, you want to call in 877-996-2556. Steve the banker is in Massachusetts. Hey, Steve.
How you doing?
Compared to what?
I don't know. I guess compared to the last depression we had.
Not so good. Well, I wasn't around then, but not so good. Every time one of these so-called economic reports come out, it's really scary. And then, and right in that moment, I think, well, you know, my government, my president's going to do something and pull us out of this. And then Obama comes out with one of these speeches, or you find out what's going on between him and Boehner. And it's just, I don't know, I start to get a little bit dizzy, I guess. You're a little nauseous. I'm serious.
Well, I don't have any good news for you tonight, and I did want to hit on a few things.
Okay.
So I'll try to hit them. I know you don't have too much time, but, I listen to plenty of talk shows, and, you know, I love yours. And whenever somebody calls in and gets really down on Obama, you know, usually the talk show host will go, and I listen mostly to the left, gets a little defensive about it.
Mm-hmm.
And, but I hate to say, and I'm, as you know, I'm in it next week.
Right.
There's no cavalry. Not only is there no cavalry, there's not even dust.
Yeah, no, I know. I mean, I don't know what everybody is waiting for in terms of, I'm talking about us common folk. I think we keep thinking that this is going to turn around. It's not.
It's not. And it's quicksand's getting deeper fast. I did see some improvement many, many months back, but that's all over with, and that's been over with a number of months ago. One very quick, for instance, where all the jobs are, the job thing just went down. Of course it went down because there's so many Republican governors that on the governor level, they're holding up millions of jobs just in my, birth state of, New York and New Jersey. I was mm-hmm. born in New York. Everybody who lives there knows about the Holland Tunnel, Lincoln Tunnel.
Right.
And that project, I might have brought it up once before. But, the idiotic Governor Christie in New Jersey is holding up a project that would build two brand-new tunnels underneath the Hudson River. Not only would they be, state-of-the-art transportation, but it would also be for communication. It would bring approximately, get this, 50,000 jobs,
mm-hmm.
on top of which there would be thousands upon thousands, hundreds of thousands of jobs on both sides of the river for all those guys, of course, making pizza, cutting hair, and all the other things that go along with supporting that network.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about now all the projects across the country added up of all the high-speed rail and all the other things that we could be doing. And if you had Democratic governors instead of Republican, we would probably have 6 million more people working simply at the state level
mm-hmm.
with that federal money. So that's how important FDR and how brilliant he was. Brilliant. As every day goes by, FDR becomes, for me, more brilliant every day. I listened to some of the speeches. I reread some of the stuff he did. He stood up and against the class that he was born in.
Right.
And you just don't see it in this president. One other thing I wanted to say before, and I don't mean to hog it, but...
No, go ahead.
You brought up the abortion thing, and just for a moment, because it's personal for me, when I was 22 years old, coming out of college in Jersey, I had to, and I always say I had to go through an abortion because the girl who I was in love with at that point, 30 years ago,
mm-hmm.
We had an abortion. And, for these morons, these religious freaks, I want to tell you, it's as freaky and religious and backwards as can be. Absolutely insane. And
it is.
It's just insane. But I don't know. I mean, if you had any questions, I'd be happy to tell you. On the money side.
Well,
it's just not happening, man.
No, I know. And the Christie thing, that was a couple of, 6 months ago, where he turned down. I forget, what was it, a couple billion dollars of federal stimulus for exactly what you're talking about, those tunnels under the
anybody who was either born or breathed Jersey air and who heard that, we're talking about, again, if you really believe the brilliance. First of all, the Holland Tunnel was built in the 1920s,
right,
under Republican presidents. And the Lincoln Tunnel, which happens to be three tunnels in one,
mm-hmm,
the Lincoln Tunnel. I mean, we are using in the year 2010 tunnels that were 80 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Think about it. We built those tunnels when, you know, Ford. What were they called?
Model A?
Model A cars were going through those tunnels. Now it's the year 2011. You know, you have Camaros, you have trucks that are, you know, 4 million feet long. What planet are the Republicans living on?
Yeah, it's crazy. And I just wonder how long the country can sustain with this kind of a total lack of leadership on the part of the Democrats, and this poisonous, destructive attitude on the part of the Republicans. It's not sustainable, Stephen. You know this. Like you said, you're in up to your eyeballs. You know what's going on. There is no cavalry coming.
No, there's no cavalry.
Crack of where the light gets in is if Obama would use his power the same way FDR did, lay out a program that will put 6, 7, 8, 10 million people to work next month, and then dare the Republicans not to fund it.
Somebody brought it up, I think.
And he's not going to do that, Stephen.
Exactly. He's not going to. And that's the tragedy. The failure that we have already is that we are not, there is nobody in Congress, there's nobody in the House in a full offensive with programs that we are going to do from top to bottom in the midst of the ideas that should be out there.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing on our side of the table. That's why we've already lost. And for people who think Obama is Einstein and is going to come out of it, I thought that too for the first year. I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
I'm done. And I'm a pretty informed guy. I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
I'm done.
I know. So am I.
So,
I mean, this has been, after 8 years of Bush and then 3 years of Obama, I don't know.
Look, he didn't even close down Guantanamo. He didn't even close that down.
Right.
I mean, I'm also love reading history on Civil War and all the decisions that this human being, Abraham Lincoln, made.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he stuck by his decisions, right, wrong, and in between, this guy. And he also learned from his mistakes, as human as he was. And this guy, I mean, he said he read FDR and Lincoln before he came into the White House. I mean, well, you made a decision. You either get rid of McClellan, or you keep the same general and you keep making the same mistake. Well,
mm-hmm,
this guy, he's letting the generals run his show. That's the bottom line.
And he's letting
the military.
And he's letting the corporatists run it also.
And now you got the equation exactly.
It's just a damn shame. Stephen,
yep.
There's the music. Got to go. Hey, stay in touch, all right?
I always do.
If I don't hear from you for an extended period of time, I get nervous as hell. I think maybe you've left the country.
I'm still here.
All right, man. Talk to you later. Thank you. Appreciate it, Stephen. Take care.
Get your news unfiltered, only with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Back to your calls. John is calling from New Zealand, listening online. Hey, John.
Mike, a pleasure and an honor to talk to you, and a happy belated birthday.
Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot. I'm just impressed to get a call from New Zealand, for heaven's sake.
Well, you know, first of all, Mike, anytime you and Kathy and Molly want, it would be an honor to host you in my home. But
thank you.
It is refreshing to live outside of the tiny prism that is the fear-based propaganda corporate machine in America.
Mm-hmm.
And I think anyone who wants to know what's coming only needs to read The Shock Doctrine,
right,
and Confessions of an Economic Hitman.
Right, exactly.
Everyone keeps talking about what Obama could do or is capable of, and what they're not accepting is that this is what he wants. This is his agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, the entire progressive left is left eating little crumbs and saying, well, Obama did the best he could.
Well, not everybody on the progressive left. I think that's what a lot of liberals are saying. But I don't think people out on the progressive left are buying it anymore, probably for a while.
No, without question. And, you know, I remember fondly your prescient fireside reading of 1984.
Mm.
And I look back and I'm wistful and nostalgic when I thought that a day of endless war and corporate ownership still seemed far away.
Yeah, yeah. What made you leave the States and move there?
I'm sorry, Mike, what?
You're an American expat, right?
That's correct.
What made you leave and move to New Zealand?
Because here it is a egalitarian system where the majority of people live good lives with clean air, clean water, clean food, no nukes, and no war, and a socialized health system that I actually help contribute to. And I see what a difference a life not having to pay for the fear of getting sick.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How long have you been there, John?
On and off for almost 4 years, Mike.
And are you making it permanent?
Only time will tell.
Yeah.
But the news coming out of America, I mean, I cannot believe that at a time when the American economy is about to tank, the best that the Republicans will concede to is a tax on private jets. I can only tell you, Mike, how sad and hilarious it is at the same time from abroad what people think of that sort of an attitude.
I know. Who was it that said in American elections, Americans should not be allowed, presidential elections, Americans should not be allowed to vote. Citizens of the world should be the ones that select the American president because of the horrendous accumulation of power that's occurred here. I tend to agree with it.
I think there's been a tremendous accumulation of power, wealth, and I mean, literally, Panetta and Petraeus switching places. I mean, literally, that's become normal in America. I'm living abroad saying, like in fear, like literally my jaw dropped.
I hear you. All right, John.
Anyhow, Mike, regards to Kathy and Molly, and stay well.
All right. Thanks, John. Stay in touch. I appreciate you taking time to call in. Thank you, sir.
Always listening, Mike.
All right. Thanks, John. Take care. Notice how John sounded as opposed to the calls that we get from Blue? Oh, well. After this break, podcast trivia. So hopefully Kathy will pick up the phone and ask the people online on hold if they want to do podcast trivia. If not, we'll clear the lines and do it. So coming up right after this break, stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. Trivia on the Malloy program. We can win 1 year subscription to Malloy Show podcast downloads, commercial free. All I have to do is answer the question correctly. And oh, they're always such easy questions. So let's see what we've got here. Mike is in Milwaukee. Hello, Mike.
Good evening. How are you doing, Mike?
I'm doing okay. Hey, listen, you ready to try the trivia thing before we get to what you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, I told Kathy I'd give it a try. I'm going to embarrass myself. Go ahead.
No, it's not that big of a deal one way or the other. But here we go. Here we go. Yesterday, rapture-ready Republican Michelle Bachmann became the first and only presidential hopeful to sign a controversial pledge written by an Iowa Christian conservative group. Here's your question. What did she pledge to do? Is it A, tithe 10% of her Botox supply to needy televangelists? B, to support the Defense of Marriage Act, be faithful to her husband, promote robust childbearing and reproduction, and oppose gay marriage and abortion? C, to carry the message of the Christ to the states of New Hampshire and Massachusetts as soon as she figures out which is which? Or D, to personally edit every high school science book in her district to remove references to evolution and replace them with drawings of Jesus riding a dinosaur?
I think the last one sounds the most believable for her. But I think it's the one about her husband.
Yeah, that's it. You got it. All right. You got it, Mike. Now let me, we're not going to hang up after you chat because Kathy will get the information from you, but, let me just, expand a little bit on this. The pledge is called The Marriage Vow, a Declaration of Dependence Upon Marriage and Family. And it requires signers to promise, among other things, to keep marital fidelity, support the Defense of Marriage Act. That's the one that says gay folk are not quite human enough to form their own contracts. And to perform robust childbearing and reproduction, oppose gay marriage, oppose abortion, oppose Sharia Islam, oppose intrusively intimate commingling among attracteds, whatever that means, in the military, and the abuse of women and children through human trafficking, pornography, and prostitution. Boy, that's they just about covered everything, didn't they?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. All right. Now, conspiracy theory, Mike.
Yeah. You know, it's just really strange. The guy from New Zealand came on just before me and mentioned John Perkins' book, The Confessions of an Economic Hitman.
Right.
because I was going to bring that up. And I just want to ask you first, do you have your tinfoil hat out?
Let me get it here. Wait a second. Let me get it. All right, here it is. Okay, I've got it out and on.
Okay, I do too. So this is the thing. I haven't subscribed to any of the conspiracies. 9/11, I'm not quite sure about. And I just actually, I don't even want to think about them. But I was reading one of the latest conspiracies about Obama and the CIA connection. And I was reading it, and something very, very...
Weird?
Weird. Well, you know what? There was this connection. Hold on a minute.
Sure. So, anyway, I was standing on the street corner the other day, and guy goes by in a cab, and he waves, and I look back, and I couldn't figure out who it was. So I, you know, jumped on my bike and followed the cab down the street. And the cab, what the hell happened to him? Mike! He won the contest. He told me to hold on a second, and then something ate him. I think we had a... Where was he calling from? Let's call the police. I don't know. All right, Mike, we'll get somebody out there to help you. I swear to God we will. What happened? What? There. See who that is. See if that's him. Quick. Is that Mike? Is it? So anyway, I was chasing the cab down the street, and so this guy throws me a bologna sandwich. Is that him? All right. Good God, you scared us. What happened?
I don't know. Something happened to the phone. The timer on the phone was going, and I knew that I was connected, but I wasn't hearing anything.
All right.
Immediately.
You can hear me. You can hear me now, right?
I can hear you now, and I do have Verizon, so yes.
Okay.
Just a thing. I was reading about how he graduated from Columbia College at the age of about 22. And immediately after that, he was approached by DIC, which is Business International Corporation. And this company hired him.
Wait. Mike, before you get any further, where did you get the information first?
Well, I got it from a veteran's website, but the guy's name, the reporter's name is Madsen.
Wayne Madsen?
Yeah.
Okay, never mind.
What have you heard of him?
Well, I've heard a lot of pro and con, but have you noticed that IBM, International Business Machines, sounds a little bit like... What was the one that they mentioned at the website?
It's BIC.
Business International Corporation?
Correct.
I don't think so, Mike. No. Don't let that stuff get to you too much, because some of these people, they're like spiders. They can weave a web that just sounds so damn plausible. Somebody was telling me the other day that, and I forget where I heard this one, maybe it was today, that Henry Kissinger and Rupert Murdoch were involved in, when Murdoch was still a citizen of Australia, Kissinger went down and they had a meeting and all these plans were laid out. Look, it's bad enough just having to deal with the capitalist thugs that are destroying the country. Business International Corporation. Did you try to look up and see if that existed?
Yes, it does.
It does exist.
Oh yeah, it does exist, and this is the thing, Mike. I think I do need to substantiate a lot of that stuff, and I have tried to do a little research on it, independent of this Wayne Madsen guy.
Right.
But the thing, this is the point. Regardless of all the little factoids that they're throwing out, If it is true that he was hired right out of Columbia, there's not much in his autobiography that discusses what happens between the time he gets out of Columbia and the time he enters Harvard. There's not much going on with his life.
Well, what does Wayne Madsen say? Is this when they put the cylinder in the back of Obama's neck?
No. Well, listen. This is the thing. He goes to this is what I heard.
Okay.
He goes to Pakistan, and he lands up staying with a dignitary there.
Okay. Mike. Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. I'm sure Wayne Madsen spun a great story, but we just don't have enough time. Wayne Madsen is. A great storyteller. I'll leave it at that. But Obama going to Pakistan when he was 21 years old and just got out of Columbia. Gives me the shudders. All right, listen, Mike, I got to put you on hold for a second. Stay right there. Kathy will pick up and get the information for your podcast trivia win. And thanks, Mike. I appreciate it. I'll tell you what, Mike, do a little more research and let me know what you find out. Email me something. I'll be happy to check it out. Paula in Bayonne, I know when you quit high school or when you graduated high school, you made a special trip to Indonesia. Am I right?
Yeah, that's it. I sure did. I was recruited by the CIA.
And when you were in Indonesia, you stayed with, what was his name back then, Suharto, and he told you what the plan was for Borneo.
No, he didn't tell me any plans. We just got drunk on pina coladas.
Oh, I see. Okay, all right.
Smoked some weed. That was it.
Hi, Paula.
Hi, how are you, Mike?
I'm better now that you've called in.
I've been apoplectic all week.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
About what?
Well, gee. What? About, you know.
I know. I'm kidding.
Our dear leader.
It's just getting stranger and stranger, isn't it?
Yeah, selling us down the river. And what I'm angry at myself for being angry. We've seen this movie before.
Yeah.
You know, it writes itself.
It does.
You know, all the conventions of the genre are there.
Yes.
There's a problem.
Yes.
Obama seeks bipartisanship.
You know,
told his cards before the hands even dealt.
Well, that's the thing. That's what Obama calls bipartisanship. That's where you find out that your opponent is willing to offer 10, and before he says, I'll give you 10, you say, I'll give you 20. And that's his idea of bipartisanship. Paul, hold on a minute. I got to do some commercials. We'll come right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Talking with Paula in Bayonne. All right, where were we?
Where were we?
You had a rough week.
Yeah, Obama caved yet again.
He
folded like a cheap suit.
What makes him do that? Do you have any idea?
Well, I don't think he's folding. I think to us it looks like he's folding.
Yeah?
But I think he's getting exactly what he wants.
Yeah, you said that.
It's the only thing that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's not stupid.
Right.
He's just playing us for chumps.
Why would Obama? Well, you know, Obama does not come from the moneyed class. As a matter of fact, like he is reported in his biographies, he at one time, if I'm not mistaken, even though his mother was well educated and comes from a middle class family, didn't at one time they were close to food stamps and the usual working class story for a lot of people that grew up 40 years ago. So Obama does, you know, Obama doesn't come from the wealthy class. Is he what? Is he wanting to get into that class by betraying the middle class? Is that it?
I think it's wanting to be a part of that class. I think it's also, he thinks they have the answers. They're a group of people he holds in esteem. And there's a difference, you know, like typical working class, it's different. You know, both his parents were college educated.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that makes a difference as well.
Mm-hmm.
Where it wasn't like a hard scrabble kind of thing where his dad worked blue collar jobs and, you know.
Well,
mom did laundry.
Yeah, do I have it wrong on the food stamp thing? Am I thinking?
No, I've heard that as well.
Right, okay.
No, I've heard that as well.
Yeah, because I know both of his parents were educated. His mother held some very high-profile or high-paying, I think high-paying, jobs at various times in her career. I don't mean to make it sound like, you know, he comes from, like I come from the factory class. You know, working class of factory workers. He didn't come from that at all. He comes from a much higher click up than most of us, but still it just seems like outright betrayal. Like that article I've quoted from tonight, is he going to be the first Democratic president that will truly begin the dismantling of everything that FDR put together that constitutes the social safety net in this country? It looks like he is.
Yes, I think he is too. I think he really wants to be a Republican. I remember when you were saying, you know, you were saying he should just drop, like, not run, not seek a second term.
And kick ass and take names, right.
Yeah. My hope was that just, my thing was, like, change parties. Screw him up that way. Become a Republican. Like, you're already there. It's just a name change.
Yeah.
You know, he's already aligned with them on so many things. He wants to, I mean, he compliments them every chance he gets. He doesn't waste an opportunity, and that's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
When the healthcare was coming down to the line, who mm-hmm. did he call out? Did he call out Max Baucus? Did he call out either of the Nelson twins? Did he call out Mary Landrieu or Blanche Lincoln or Joe Lieberman? No, he called out Dennis Kucinich.
Mm-hmm.
He went to Ohio, and he called out Dennis Kucinich. So he knows what to do.
Right.
When he has to. So the only thing I can gather from this is that he agrees, and I think we have to stop operating under the assumption that Democrats are somehow different.
Well, that's the thing. That has been the slow evolution over the past 30 or 40 years. I think ever since Reagan. Reagan was a snake charmer. And, you know, once you have Reagan Democrats, you're going to have elected officials who are still Democrats in name, but are really more like what we're talking about here, Republican wannabes, but they don't have the courage to just come out and say, look, I'm going to be a Republican. But the thing, I read something the other day that the largest collection of millionaires and beyond under one roof are the members of the U.S. Congress, the House, and the Senate. Very few of those people are anywhere near income levels of the people that they claim to represent. They're way beyond it. And since they are beyond it, and I know that the Obamas made over $1 million last year, whatever it was, when they have to, you know, make public their tax returns. But when you get to that point, your interests no longer are with the community organizing thing that he came out of. I mean, that was just dues paying. How can you have as one of your central themes the welfare of working mothers, say single mothers or single fathers, when you're not part of that anymore?
No, you can't. And I think the whole community organizer thing was just resume padding. I'm serious, you know.
Really?
Thinking about a future in politics, you know, let me, you know, get some, you know, kind of like joining the debate team in high school.
Right, well.
You know, that's what it was, but they can't, you know, Sam Cedar brings this up all the time, that all the people who were working on the Social Security fix aren't going to, won't need it.
Sure.
When their time comes to where they won't need it.
Right.
But for most of us, it is a substantial portion of our retirement.
Mm-hmm.
If we get there. And, you know, I'll be 42 at the end of the month.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, when I was young, my father had a heart attack and couldn't work anymore. So I benefited from Social Security.
A lot of people have that experience, Paula. It's not just a retirement insurance policy. That's its main function, but it's not just that. Hey, Paula, there's the music. We got to get out of here, all right?
All right, Mike. Have a good weekend.
All right, you too. Thanks for checking in. Don't be a stranger like this, all right?
Yeah, I won't, Mike.
All right. Thanks, Paula.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Well, nice way to finish the week with a chat with Paula from Bayonne. Hey, have a good weekend, all right? Okay? Wait a minute. What am I saying here? Blah, 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 blah. Take care. Keep it lit. I'll see you Monday. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.
Protection against